that violates the values. Of course, it's important that you follow through on that commitment to the values in the rare occasion that a candidate calls the bluff. Interview questions. Here are a few questions that can help you get at the essence of humble, hungry, and smart. Humble. Tell me the most important accomplishments of your career. Look for more mentions of we than I. Of course, it isn't about being so simplistic as to count the responses. In the event that someone refers to herself individually more than as a member of a team, probe for whether she was working alone or with others. What was the most embarrassing moment in your career, or the biggest failure? Look for whether the candidate celebrates that moment or is mortified by it. Humble people generally aren't afraid to tell their unflattering stories because they're comfortable with being imperfect. Also, look for specifics and real references to the candidate's own culpability. How did you handle that embarrassment or failure? Again, look for specifics about how he accepted responsibility, what he learned from it, and if he actually acted on what he learned. What is your greatest weakness? Yes, this is a tired question, but it's still a great one. The key is to look for answers that are real and a little painful. Candidates who present their weaknesses as strengths, I take on too much, or I have a hard time saying no, are often afraid to acknowledge real shortcomings. To avoid this, I think it's a good idea to coach candidates. I really want to know what you'd like to change about yourself, or better yet, what your best friends would say you need to work on. The key to the answer is not what their weaknesses are, unless, of course, they're an axe murderer, but if they're comfortable acknowledging something real. How do you handle apologies, either giving or accepting them? Look for and ask for specifics. Humble people are not afraid to say they are sorry, and they accept other people's genuine apologies with grace. People who do this usually have specific stories. Tell me about someone who is better than you in an area that really matters to you. Look for the candidate to demonstrate a genuine appreciation for others who have more skill or talent. Humble people are comfortable with this. Ego-driven people often are not. Hungry. What is the hardest you've ever worked on something in your life? Look for specific examples of real but joyful sacrifice. In other words, the candidate isn't complaining but is grateful for the experience. What do you like to do when you're not working? Look out for too many time-consuming hobbies that suggest the candidate sees the job as a means to do other things. That's not to say that there is one specific kind of activity that is an indicator of not being hungry. And it's certainly not to say that you're looking for someone who has no interests in life outside of work. But a long list of hobbies like extreme skiing, sled dog racing, storm chasing, and shark hunting might just be a red flag when it comes to someone who is not going to put the needs of the team ahead of personal pursuits. Did you work hard when you were a teenager? Look for specifics, usually relating to schoolwork, sports, or jobs. And when it comes to sports, it's not about participation and having fun. Look for examples of difficulty, sacrifice, and hardship. I like to ask people about how hard they worked in high school. Did they really try to do well? Did they have a job? Did they train extraordinarily hard in a sport? You're not looking for one particular answer, but rather for something real that indicates the person has a work ethic. And a work ethic usually, but not always, gets established early in life. What kinds of hours do you generally work? Hard-working people usually don't want to work 9 to 5 unless their unique life situations demand it. And if they do, they are usually getting additional work done at home. That's not to say that some people aren't stuck in dead-end 9-to-5 jobs and are itching to get out and do something challenging. But if a candidate is satisfied with a predictable schedule and talks too much about balance, there's a chance he isn't terribly hungry. Again, not a litmus test, but a red flag. None of this is to advocate that people should prioritize their work over their families. Not at all. It's just that when a candidate focuses a lot on the hours that he's expected to work, he may not be the kind of hungry team player you need. Smart. Knowing whether a person has people smarts is difficult to discern by asking a specific question. What is more important is observing her general behavior during an interview process and the way she answers questions. That's why it's important to put her in situations that are not like traditional interviews. Observe how she deals with waiters and waitresses, store clerks and cab drivers. Some people can mask their social awkwardness during a rehearsed interview, but for a longer period of time in a fluid situation, it is much harder. Having said all that, here are a few questions that might elicit information about whether a person is smart. How would you describe your personality? Look for how accurately the person describes what you are observing and how introspective he is. Smart people generally know themselves and find it interesting to talk about their behavioral strengths and weaknesses. People who seem stumped or surprised by this question might not be terribly smart when it comes to people. What do you do that others in your personal life might find annoying? Everyone annoys someone, sometimes, especially at home. Smart people are not immune to this, but neither are they in the dark about it, and they tend to moderate these behaviors at work. What kind of people annoy you the most, and how do you deal with them? What you're looking for here are self-awareness and self-control. Smart people know their pet peeves, and they own the fact that some of those pet peeves are their own issues. They also know how to deal with annoying people in a productive, constructive way. Would your former colleagues describe you as an empathic person? Or, can you give me an example of how you've demonstrated empathy to a teammate? Some people use the word empathetic. The issue is whether the candidate seems to understand what others are feeling. Now, there are certain personality types that are less empathic than others, and that's fine. What you're looking for here is an indication that the person values empathy, and whether he or she has an understanding of his or her own strengths or weaknesses in this area. Perhaps the most important question that interviewers can ask to ascertain whether a candidate is smart is one that they should ask themselves. Would I want to work with this person every day? Smart candidates generally seem like the kind of people you'd enjoy spending time with on a regular basis. On its own, it's not a reason to hire them, because it doesn't get at humility or hunger, but it's certainly an important hurdle to overcome in the longer process of choosing people to hire. Candidate references. Beyond the actual interview, there are other ways to get information as to whether a person will be an ideal team player. One of those, as tired and limited as it may seem, is doing reference checks on candidates. Now, there are many, many people in the world who know a lot more about this than I do, and there are plenty of reasons why reference checks are not easy in this litigious and protective society. But when looked at not as a legal protection, but as an informal tool for helping ensure that you don't make your team or the candidate miserable, it can be very helpful. And many of the same principles apply to reference checks that apply to interviews. Put the reference provider at ease. It's critical that a reference not feel that he is holding the future of the candidate in his hands, because this makes him want to be overly positive, or in many cases, cautious and general. Explain that the purpose of your call is not simply to ask if the candidate was a good employee, but rather whether she would thrive in the job she's interviewing for. In other words, ask the reference to serve as a consultant, one whose job it is to ensure that there is a fit that will benefit everyone. If that sounds dishonest or tricky, consider that it's nothing but the truth. All you want to do is describe the culture of the team the candidate will be joining and find out whether the reference thinks it's a match. Assure the reference that he or she isn't the only person providing input, and that everything will be kept confidential and discreet. Look for specifics. It's fine to start by asking the reference to give you 3 or 4 adjectives that best describe the candidate. Those might be good indicators of humble, hungry, or smart. But spend your time asking about specific behaviors and about how the candidate compared to other people the reference has managed or worked with. Adjust the interview questions from the previous section and see how they match up with what the candidate said. Focus on areas of doubt. Use the reference check to explore areas that you are unclear about relating to the candidate. If you're really clear on humility and smarts, probe specifically for hunger. Use the time wisely and get to questions that reveal specific behaviors rather than general assessments. Pay attention to references who don't respond. When reference givers do not respond to your requests for a reference, it is possible that they aren't enthusiastic about the candidate. Remember, the candidate provided the names of the references. Most people are excited to provide a positive reference for a former employee or colleague. When they aren't, they often delay or avoid doing so. Ask what others would say. Just as you would ask the candidate what others would say about him or her, ask references the same question. It gives them permission to say, "I always thought she was a hard worker, but some of her colleagues weren't so sure." That allows them to feel like they aren't bad-mouthing the candidate, but at the same time makes it easier to share important information. Application number 2. Assessing current employees. Another extremely important application of the ideal team player model is the assessment or evaluation of current employees. In the end, there are 3 outcomes of this evaluation. 1. Confirming that the employee is an ideal team player. 2. Helping the employee improve and become one. Or 3. Deciding to move the employee out. Thankfully, humility, hunger, and smarts are not inherent traits, but rather they can be adopted by people with the desire to embrace them. Leaders can evaluate their people against the 3 virtues in order to help them identify what they need to work on for their own good and the good of the team. This is the preferred outcome. However, there will be situations in which a leader is struggling with an employee, and the assessment can be used to identify the source of that struggle, a lack of humility, hunger, or smarts. If the employee is unwilling or unable to address the shortcoming, dismissal may be the best outcome for the employee and the team. What happens when a manager can't decide if an employee has the will or ability to improve? My preference and my recommendation is to err on the side of caution and keep working with the employee. Why? Because I believe it is a tragedy to lose an employee for the wrong reasons. Not only does it create an unnecessarily painful situation for that person, but it also robs the team of a potentially valuable contributor. It's important not to misread my advice as permission to tolerate people who don't fit. Too often, leaders know that an employee really doesn't belong and would be better elsewhere, and they fail to act because they lack courage. This is neither wise nor virtuous. My suggestion here only applies to situations in which a leader is sincerely unsure about the employee's ability to improve and change. So how exactly should a leader go about evaluating people for humility, hunger, and smarts? There is no easy quantitative diagnostic, but there are reliable qualitative approaches that can work very well. Manager assessment. There are a number of questions managers can ask themselves about a given employee to determine whether he or she is humble, hungry, or smart. Here are some good ones. Humble. Does he genuinely compliment or praise teammates without hesitation? Does she easily admit when she makes a mistake? Is he willing to take on lower-level work for the good of the team? Does she gladly share credit for team accomplishments? Does he readily acknowledge his weaknesses? Does she offer and receive apologies graciously? Hungry. Does he do more than what is required in his own job? Does she have passion for the mission of the team? Does he feel a sense of personal responsibility for the overall success of the team? Is she willing to contribute to and think about work outside of office hours? Is he willing and eager to take on tedious and challenging tasks whenever necessary? Does she look for opportunities to contribute outside of her area of responsibility? Smart. Does he seem to know what teammates are feeling during meetings and interactions? Does she show empathy to others on the team? Does he demonstrate an interest in the lives of teammates? Is she an attentive listener? Is he aware of how his words and actions impact others on the team? Is she good at adjusting her behavior and style to fit the nature of a conversation or relationship? An ideal team player will merit a yes answer to almost every one of these questions. If that seems unrealistic, go back and look at the questions again and imagine which of them would be unnecessary or optional. And remember, we're looking for ideal team players, not adequate ones. The purpose of using these questions is not to provide leaders with a definitive quantitative indicator of humility, hunger, or people smarts, but rather to inform their judgment and intuition. In many cases, a leader will have an intuitive sense of how an employee stacks up against the three virtues without having to do an assessment at all. In those situations, the assessment can serve as a helpful check of that intuition. Employee self-assessment. I believe that the most effective way to assess employees is often to ask them to evaluate themselves. Certainly, this is not always the case. Some employees, the ones who lack people smarts in a big way, may not even be aware of it. Those who are not at all humble will often lack the self-esteem to admit it. And the people who are clearly not hungry would be too embarrassed to admit their relative lack of passion or commitment to a team. Having said that, the vast majority of employees really are willing to own up to their limitations as long as the process is aimed at improvement instead of punishment, and assuming that the work environment is not completely dysfunctional. This self-assessment approach is preferable because it allows employees to take ownership for their areas of development, and it minimizes the possibility of defensiveness and denial. The best way to allow employees to do self-assessments is to give them explicit questions to consider and phrase those questions in ways that encourage honesty. Ironically, as is true for interviews, the best way to do that is to ask employees to assess what their teammates would say about them. It's still a self-assessment, but it is based on observable behaviors. After all, a good team player must not only have the right attitude, but must demonstrate the right behaviors in a way that others see and understand. Instruction. Use the scale below to indicate how each statement applies to your actions on the team. Respond as honestly as possible, as this will allow you to most accurately identify any areas of development that you may have. Scale. 3 equals usually. 2 equals sometimes. 1 equals rarely. Humble. My teammates would say, 1. I compliment or praise them without hesitation. 2. I easily admit to my mistakes. 3. I am willing to take on lower-level work for the good of the team. 4. I gladly share credit for team accomplishments. 5. I readily acknowledge my weaknesses. 6. I offer and accept apologies graciously. Hungry. My teammates would say, 7. I do more than what is required in my own job. 8. I have passion for the mission of the team. 9. I feel a sense of personal responsibility for the overall success of the team. 10. I am willing to contribute to and think about work outside of office hours. 11. I am willing to take on tedious or challenging tasks whenever necessary. 12. I look for opportunities to contribute outside of my area of responsibility. Smart. My teammates would say, 13. I generally understand what others are feeling during meetings and conversations. 14. I show empathy to others on the team. 15. I demonstrate an interest in the lives of my teammates. 16. I am an attentive listener. 17. I am aware of how my words and actions impact others on the team. 18. I adjust my behavior and style to fit the nature of a conversation or relationship. Scoring. Remember, the purpose of this tool is to help you explore and assess how you embody the three virtues of an ideal team player. The standards for ideal are high. An ideal team player will have few of these statements answered with anything lower than a 3, usually, response. A score of 18 or 17 is an indication that the virtue is a potential strength. A score range of 16 to 14 is an indication that you most likely have some work to do around that virtue to become an ideal team player. A score of 13 or lower is an indication that you need improvement around that virtue to become an ideal team player. Finally, keep in mind that while this tool is quantitative, the real value will be found in the qualitative, developmental conversations among team members and their managers. Don't focus on the numbers, but rather the concepts and the individual statements where you scored low. A gentler approach. Ranking. If using an assessment like this seems a little overwhelming given the politics or sensitivity on a team or in a given organization, here is an alternative approach. Ask team members to simply rank the three virtues for themselves, starting with the one they feel they demonstrate most clearly, followed by the second and then the third. This allows everyone to call out their relative weakness without having to admit the extent of that weakness, and it gives the leader and the employee a place to begin development. Peer evaluations versus peer discussion. I'm not a big proponent of peer evaluations in general, at least not the formal kind where teammates assess one another's strengths and weaknesses on paper and then learn how they were evaluated at a later date. I think that process is fraught with the potential for misunderstanding, politics, and unnecessary pain. When it comes to assessing peers on the basis of humility, hunger, or people smarts, my opposition is even stronger. That's because these attributes are particularly personal, and the price of inaccurate evaluation may be the loss of trust on the team. That price is too high, especially when there are better, more constructive ways to help employees understand their areas for development. Having said that, I believe that the most powerful activity that occurs around any assessment is peer discussion. Sitting down as a group and having teammates reveal and discuss their own relative weaknesses related to humble, hungry, and smart is a powerful way to ensure that all of this will lead to change and that teammates will be one another's best coaches. We'll talk about that more in the next section. Application number 3. Developing employees who are lacking in one or more of the virtues. Once a leader or employee has established a clear sense of his employees or his own relative strengths and weaknesses related to the three virtues, the process of improvement can begin. But before we get into that, we should take on a few critical and cautionary questions up front. What is the key to making development work, and what do you do if it doesn't? The most important part of the development process, and the part that is so often missing, is the leader's commitment to constantly reminding an employee if she is not yet doing what is needed. Without this, improvement will not occur. I know this seems very simple, so why don't most managers do it? Because it's uncomfortable. No one likes telling a person for the 5th week in a row that she still isn't working hard enough or isn't dealing with her colleagues in a socially appropriate way. It's unpleasant and awkward. And yet, it's what a manager must do. When a manager steps up to this challenge week after week after painful week, one of two things will almost always happen. First, the employee will finally break through, determined not to keep hearing those reminders. She'll reach the top of the hill, so to speak, and make her way to the other side where her humility or hunger or smarts kicks in. When that happens, she'll be in her manager's debt forever. The other likely outcome will be that she will finally decide that being humble or hungry or smart is not her thing, and she'll decide on her own to leave. Hopefully she'll do so with the guidance and blessing of her manager, and her departure will be seen by everyone as the best way for her to move on in her career. Sometimes she won't have that level of self-confidence, and she'll resent the manager and the team for a while. In either case, she is making the decision herself, and that is good. There is a third outcome that should happen very rarely. In some cases, an employee decides that she will tolerate the constant reminding from her manager about her issues, and she won't leave. In that case, formal action will be necessary to move her off the team, and that's usually a bureaucratic and painful process for everyone. Some might say, "Hey, that happens all the time in my company." The reason why nasty terminations and even lawsuits happen in so many organizations is that managers stop reminding people that they aren't living up to expectations. In most situations, here's how it works. The manager tells her difficult employee that he needs to change, to become more hungry, let's say. Then she sees him slacking off, and maybe she reminds him once. Then she sees it again, and she complains to her husband, or to her colleagues, or worse yet, to other members of the team she leads. This goes on for weeks or months, with passive-aggressive comments here and there, until she's finally had enough. Then she sits down with the employee and announces that he's going to be let go, and he seems shocked. Yes, shocked. How can this be? Well, in the mind of the manager, this guy has been told, and he knows that he's not hungry enough. In the mind of the employee, he feels like he was told once, maybe twice, and that he hasn't heard any other complaints, so he must be doing okay. He's mad. She's mad. Her boss is mad. The outside attorneys are busy and happy, and the team is in disarray. Again, the solution is to constantly, repeatedly, kindly, constantly Yes, I said it twice. Let the employee know that he's got to get better. Trust me, he'll almost always get better or opt out on his own. But this cannot happen, and it will not happen, if the manager shirks her responsibility to tell him where he stands. What about ideal team players? Don't they need development too? Most of this development section is focused on helping people who lack one of the three virtues in a significant way. But even people who aren't terribly deficient can benefit from improving one or more of the virtues in their lives. And because they're hungry, they're probably going to be looking for ways to improve anyway. The key to doing this is to make it clear that it is not a punitive exercise, and that just because a teammate is relatively lower in one virtue than another does not mean she's not an ideal team player. Ideal, in the context of this book, does not mean perfect. Once everyone understands that it is merely a developmental opportunity, the best approach is often to use other ideal team members as a stable of coaches. Consider that some members of a team are going to be stronger at humility than others. Get them to coach the ones who would like to improve in this area. The same is true for hungry and smart. When every ideal team player is coaching and being coached, the development process not only improves team members individually, but it also creates a stronger sense of commitment and accountability for the entire team. Using the self-assessment is a good way to get started. Ideal team players enjoy analyzing themselves and one another in order to change their behavior and improve their performance. Okay, let's get back to the purpose of this section, which is helping people who are decidedly lacking in humility, hunger, or smarts. There is no single best way to go about this, as every person has a different set of causes and behavioral manifestations related to his or her weaknesses as a team member. However, there are a number of approaches that I would recommend. Developing humility. Humility is the most sensitive of the three virtues, which is why the process of improving in this area is often the most psychologically nuanced. That's because the source of a lack of humility is always related in some way to insecurity. And for most people, insecurity is rooted in childhood and family issues that go way back beyond their first day on the job or the team. Now, all of us are insecure in one way or another. It's important that someone trying to improve his capacity for humility understands this. Otherwise, he's likely to feel too ashamed or overwhelmed to begin. If a manager or coach can demonstrate his or her own challenges with humility, it makes it a lot easier for an employee to do so. Identifying root causes. Without getting too deep into psychological analysis or therapy, a manager or coach or a motivated employee on her own can experience significant relief simply by identifying the general cause of insecurity. It may have been a lack of support from parents or a traumatic experience in her career or personal life. Whatever the case, it is often extremely helpful for a person to admit to herself, her manager, or even teammates where her struggle with humility comes from. This alone can greatly improve her ability to be coached and to elicit empathy and grace from colleagues. Sometimes the cause of struggle with humility or with the other virtues can be traced back to an employee's personality type. Using the Myers-Briggs or DISC profiles, for instance, it is sometimes possible to predict which people might have a higher likelihood of having humility problems. Pointing this out to an employee can be another big source of relief, as it allows him to realize that he is not a bad person and that many others with his same type share his challenge. It also gives him a somewhat objective rationale that he can explain to colleagues. Of course, it's not an excuse, but rather an explanation that provides the context for going forward. Exposure therapy. Beyond identifying and admitting the cause of their challenge, people who lack humility need behavioral training in an exposure therapy kind of way. Don't be put off by the clinical sound of this. What I mean is that employees can make progress simply by acting like they are humble, by intentionally forcing themselves to compliment others, admit their mistakes and weaknesses, and take an interest in colleagues. Employees can begin to experience the liberation of humility. This happens because they suddenly realize that focusing on others does not detract from their own happiness, but rather adds to it. After all, humility is the most attractive and central of all virtues. Let me repeat this, because it's as simple as it is important. What we're talking about here is simply having employees practice the very behaviors that they struggle with, so that they can come to understand the benefits to themselves and others. One way to make this happen is for the employee to make a list of the desired behaviors related to their area of development, and then track their own actions over a period of time. Sometimes having a manager involved in that process is helpful for the purposes of encouragement and verification. But the best way of all is to have teammates coach the employee, providing encouragement and immediate feedback when the desired virtues are demonstrated or lacking. If this sounds corny or childish, it is anything but that. There is nothing like having a teammate say, "Hey, I really appreciate that you've been so encouraging lately, and your concern for me personally has made a real difference." I would challenge anyone who hears that from a colleague to claim that it doesn't make him want to continue that behavior. Similarly, it's pretty powerful when a teammate kindly says, "Hey, I think you're doing that bragging thing again, and you asked us to help you by letting you know when we see it." When an entire team agrees to help an open-minded teammate, even in an area as seemingly sensitive as humility, it is amazing the progress that can be made. Leader modeling. Another important aspect of development for an employee is knowing that his manager values humility and does her best to demonstrate it. Even if the manager struggles, her willingness to admit it and continue working on it will go a long way toward encouraging the employee to do the same. This is true with all of the virtues, as well as in any other behavioral pursuit related to work. Developing hunger. Hunger is the least sensitive and nuanced of the three virtues. That's the good news. The bad news is, based on my experience, it's the hardest to change. While it's tempting for an employee to downplay his lack of hunger, it's difficult for him to deny it over time because of the behaviorally observable and often measurable nature of the virtue. From work rate and output to goal achievement and hours worked, it's not hard to demonstrate to an employee that he seems less hungry than his colleague. Unfortunately, even when he acknowledges a problem in this area, getting him to actually become hungry is difficult. Remember, it's not merely a matter of increasing his output. There are plenty of methods and tools related to goal setting and performance management for doing that. It's about actually transforming the employee so that he can ultimately come to embody the idea of going above and beyond and no longer need extra prodding and reminding. Why is this so difficult? I suppose it's because a person who lacks hunger sometimes prefers to be this way, at least in the specific context of a given team. In other words, for some people, being less hungry than others has its benefits. More free time, less responsibility, more emphasis on other, more preferred activities. That isn't to say that someone who prefers these things is a bad person. But quite often he is a bad team member. Yes, I know that sounds politically incorrect, but it's true. Plenty of fun, talented, and friendly people aren't great team players at work because their hunger is directed at activities outside of their jobs. Compare hunger to the other two virtues, humility and people smarts. Unlike hunger, no one really prefers to lack humility, as this inevitably causes pain and suffering for him or her and those around them. Only the most self-delusional person would claim that lacking humility is a benefit. Deep down inside, we all know it's miserable. The same is true about being smart. No one would intentionally choose to have a lack of social awareness or interpersonal adeptness. The costs of not being smart, from embarrassment to unintended insensitivity, are great, and there are no benefits. Lacking hunger, on the other hand, can actually be a desired characteristic for some people, but not for everyone. Plenty of people who lack hunger would like nothing more than to be fully engaged and more productive in their work. The point here is that some people actually do seem to prefer a sense of detachment and routineness, and pouring into them is not going to yield significant returns. The key is to find out which people who lack hunger really like being that way and which don't, and then to support the ones who want to change, and to lovingly help the others find a job that doesn't require hunger. Passion for the mission and the team. The first and most important part of helping that person become hungry is to find a way to connect her to the importance of the work being done. Until this is accomplished, a manager cannot expect much change. All too often, employees struggle to become hungry because they don't understand the connection between what they do and the impact it has on others, be they customers, vendors, or other employees. Asking someone to be a more engaged and invested team member won't do much if that employee doesn't think the work she does matters to someone. And no, wanting to keep her job isn't the kind of motivation that turns a lethargic employee into a lively one. The most effective way to do this is as a team. When a slightly non-hungry employee hears his colleagues describe their motivation and connection to the mission, one of two good things is likely to happen. He may get infected by his teammate's passion, and even if that doesn't happen, he may come to realize that he plays an important role in helping them fulfill their passion. Only a truly non-hungry person could be exposed to all of that and remain unaffected. Clear expectations. Another indispensable part of developing hunger in an employee, assuming he or she has the required tools and skills, is to set clear behavioral expectations for them and then hold them accountable for those expectations. Yes, that sounds ridiculously obvious, but for those who aren't hungry, it is particularly critical. But while it is also important to set performance targets and goals for these people, it's even more vital to clarify the behaviors you want from them. For instance, it's one thing to specify how much production you expect from someone in order for her to keep her job. Even a non-hungry employee will often meet the minimum requirement. It's another thing entirely to tell her that you expect her to help her colleagues make their numbers by doing whatever they need, including taking on some additional responsibilities, working more hours, assuming that's possible given her life situation, or doing additional research into problems until they are solved. An employee who prefers not to be hungry will recoil at this, either immediately or as soon as she sees that she is going to be held accountable for the behavior. Again, if this is the case, she should be lovingly helped to find a job somewhere that doesn't require her to be hungry. There are plenty of places and opportunities that don't require much hunger. But an employee who deep down inside wants to be hungry will respond to the clearer expectations with resolve, warranting the coaching and support of her manager and teammates. Not too gentle reminders. Even an employee with a strong but latent sense of hunger will not be transformed immediately. Habits of lethargy often have been instilled over time, and thus require some time to break. To make that happen, managers and teammates will need to overcome their reticence to call out a non-hungry teammate when they see behaviors that he needs to change. Waiting until a performance review to tell him that he isn't doing enough to help the team, or including that information in an annual 360-degree feedback program, is not only irresponsible but cruel. What that employee needs is someone to give him immediate and unambiguous feedback so that he can quickly digest the pain and translate it into a desire for change. And this needs to happen again and again, perhaps every day for a while, until the behavior changes. Yes, this will require tactful encouragement, support, and patience during the initial stages. Otherwise, the well-intentioned team member may be tempted to give up. But in most cases of personal development, tough love is the answer. And though most leaders understand this theoretically, they all too often try to go about it by omitting either the toughness or the love, or sometimes both. Encouragement. Which brings us to the next piece of obvious but often overlooked advice. When a non-hungry employee starts to exhibit signs of hunger, praise her publicly and have her teammates do the same. Might she be slightly embarrassed? Who cares? Will it seem like you're rewarding her for behavior that is merely expected of everyone else? Yes, but she needs it more than anyone else, and they know it. Over time, this extra encouragement and commendation will not be necessary, but until hunger becomes a natural part of her behavioral toolset, keep it coming. And remember, the ones trying to be humble or smart will need their own extra encouragement, too. If you have employees who resent the special attention these people are getting, you might want to assess whether they are truly humble. Leader modeling. As I wrote in the previous section, an important aspect of development for an employee is knowing that her manager is hungry and that he does his best to demonstrate it. Even if the manager struggles with being hungry at times, his willingness to admit it and continue working on it goes a long way toward helping the employee to do the same. Developing smarts. Helping someone become smarter about people is not quite as sensitive as humility, and depending on the person is not quite as hard as hunger, because anyone who lacks in this area most likely wants to improve. Still, it's a challenge. The key to helping someone become smarter is to make it clear to everyone involved that a deficiency in this area is not about intention. Employees who lack people smarts have no desire to create interpersonal problems with their teammates. They just don't understand the nuances of interpersonal situations, and they don't seem to realize how their words and actions impact others. If that person and his teammates know this and remind themselves about it, the process of helping him become smarter will be much easier and more effective. If teammates slip into the false belief that he is really trying to be a more difficult person for some ulterior motive, they are likely to start resenting him, and worse yet, shying away from giving him the help he needs. Basic training. A person who has trouble being smart with people can be likened to a pet. Stay with me here. It's not that bad. Like a puppy being trained, he needs to be quickly and lovingly rapped on the nose with a newspaper whenever he does something non-smart. I mean it when I say quickly and lovingly. Remember, his intentions aren't bad. So in the middle of a meeting, stop and say, "Hey, Bob, this is the part in the meeting where you should thank her for what she did." Or even, "Bob, I'm going to tell you this because I know you want to know, not because I'm mad at you. I'm kind of bummed out about my family situation, and it would help if you acknowledged it." Or how about this one? "The next time you have an issue with my team, you might not want to send an email, and if you do, run it by someone who can help you put a nice greeting and closing at the beginning and end. My staff was really annoyed last night, but I explained that you didn't mean it that way." If this sounds rudimentary or even juvenile, that's okay. It won't be once you establish the real nature of the help your employee needs. And if he is sincerely interested in getting better, he'll thank you for it. In fact, it will become a source of humor and bonding for him and the team. After all, his intentions are good. Like a puppy, he'll come to love you for it, and he'll be glad you don't have to clean up after him. Application number 4. Embedding the model into an organization's culture. I believe that teamwork is not a virtue, but rather a choice. It's a strategic decision, and an intentional one, which means that it's not for everyone. Having said that, I must admit that it's hard for me to imagine a company not wanting to experience the benefits of teamwork. But if the leaders of an organization are not willing to put in the considerable time and effort that it takes to make teamwork more than just a throwaway phrase or break room poster, then there is actually something virtuous about being upfront about that. I say that because I wouldn't want a leader to do what I'm going to recommend here if he or she isn't really committed to a culture of teamwork, the kind that attracts ideal team players. So for those organizations that are sincere about humility, hunger, and smarts, here are a few simple ideas for embedding those virtues into your culture. Be explicit and bold. Leaders who believe teamwork is important and expect their people to be humble, hungry, and smart should come right out and say so. They should tell everyone. Employees, vendors, partners, customers, prospective employees, everyone. Of course, they should do this in an appropriate way. It's not marketing that I'm talking about, but rather expectation setting. The point is to inform anyone who is going to be dealing with the organization, team, or department that they should expect the people they meet to be humble, hungry, and smart. Leaders shouldn't be cheesy about this. Posters and t-shirts aren't usually the answer. But whatever they do, they shouldn't hide their commitment to the three virtues, and they shouldn't make it easy for humble, hungry, and smart to fade. Eventually, their customers, vendors, partners, and employees will become their best marketing tools for finding the kind of people who fit the organization and for warding off people who don't. Why aren't more organizations explicit and bold about their culture of teamwork? In many cases, they aren't serious enough about it to put it out there with confidence or integrity. Sometimes they're embarrassed because it might sound corny, or they think it's too simple. You know what kinds of organizations are explicit about building a strong culture? The successful one. They're more than willing to do things that are simple or that might elicit cynical or sarcastic responses from competitors. Just ask Southwest Airlines, Chick-fil-A, Ritz-Carlton, or REI. Catch and revere. Leaders who want to create a culture of humility, hunger, and people smarts in their organization should be constantly on the lookout for any displays of those virtues. And when they see those displays, they should hold them up as examples for everyone to see. All too often in life, we see people do what we want them to do and we say nothing, assuming that the behavior has become natural for them, an easy standard. We justify our lack of praise by claiming that it would be embarrassing to the employee to call attention to a behavior that she sees as something fundamental. What we're failing to realize is that the point of praise is not only to reinforce the behavior in that employee, but also to reinforce it in everyone else. Great team leaders won't be afraid to call out a simple act of teamwork when they see it. They'll acknowledge an act of humility, hunger, or people smarts not because they want to be seen as sophisticated or clever managers, but because they want everyone to know exactly what kinds of behavior they expect and appreciate. I found that in most cases, managers greatly underestimate the impact that a comment or quick gesture of approval has on employees. They'll spend weeks trying to tweak an annual bonus program or some other compensation system, believing that their employees are coin-operated. But they'll neglect to stop someone during a meeting and say, "Hey, that's a fantastic example of hunger. We should all try to be more like that." I'm not saying that compensation doesn't matter, but if we want to create a culture of humility, hunger, and smarts, the best way to do it is to constantly be catching people exhibiting those virtues and publicly holding them up as examples. No balloons, pastries, or plastic tchotchkes are necessary, just genuine, in-the-moment appreciation. Detect and address. The last simple step in embedding humility, hunger, and smarts into your organization is something that any parent or coach would tell you is critical, even if it's hard for them to put it into practice. Whenever you see a behavior that violates one of the values, take the time to let the violator know that his behavior is out of line, and don't just do it in egregious situations. Often the smaller offenses are the ones that are harder for employees to see, and the ones they learn from the most. Of course, doing this well requires tact and good judgment. Coming down too hard on a minor error or being too gentle with a blatant one creates its own problems. Having said that, the key is that leaders and eventually teammates don't squander opportunities for constructive learning. Great cultures tend to be appropriately intolerant of certain behaviors, and great teams should be quick and tactful in addressing any lack of humility, hunger, and people smarts. Connecting the ideal team player model with the five dysfunctions of a team. Some who have read The Five Dysfunctions of a Team might be wondering how that book and model fit with this one. Some of those same readers may have even been involved in consulting or training activities around the Five Dysfunctions model, and they might be curious as to whether the ideal team player model can help them improve upon the work they've done. I am glad to say that the two models complement one another. Here's how. First, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team book, online team assessment, and other products all focus on how a group of people must interact in order to become a cohesive team. This book, however, focuses on an individual team member and the virtues that make him or her more likely to overcome the dysfunctions that derail teams. For instance, a person who grows in humility is going to be much better at demonstrating vulnerability than a person who is arrogant, insecure, and egotistical. Similarly, a person who improves in people smarts will have an easier time engaging in productive conflict, knowing how to read and understand teammates, and adjusting words and behaviors appropriately. In other words, the ideal team player is all about the makeup of individual team members, while the five dysfunctions are about the dynamics of teams getting things done. Second, any team that has invested time and energy in the five dysfunctions methodology can use the humble, hungry, smart model as a tune-up. We found that some teams hit a wall in their progress overcoming the dysfunctions. In many cases, the teams can break through that wall by having team members go deeper into their individual development around the virtues that might be holding them back. It's like a race car engine that has plenty of gasoline and oil, but a little bit of additive can make it run more effectively and efficiently, lubricating moving parts better or making fuel more combustible. Okay, that's the limit of my automotive knowledge, but you probably get the point. When team members improve their abilities to be humble, hungry, or smart, they'll be able to make more progress in overcoming the five dysfunctions on a regular basis. Finally, the ideal team player model and tools presented in this book provide yet another opportunity for team members to be vulnerable with one another. By sitting down and acknowledging their strengths and weaknesses, remember, the leader should always go first, a team can develop greater levels of trust among members, which make conflict, commitment, accountability, and results that much more likely. The Five Dysfunctions of a Team Summary. Number 1. Absence of Trust. The fear of being vulnerable with team members prevents the building of trust within the team. Number 2. Fear of Conflict. The desire to preserve artificial harmony stifles the occurrence of productive ideological